Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
Diving in with another guest, and we're always pumped to bring in another physical therapist. We have Dr. Lisa Folden, who's a licensed physical therapist, mom-focused health coach, and the owner of Healthy Fit Physical Therapy and Wellness Consultants in Charlotte, North Carolina. Here's a little bit more about Dr. Lisa. As a body positive, a women's health expert, and healthy at every size ambassador, Dr. Folden assists women in seeking a healthier lifestyle by guiding their wellness choices through organization, planning strategies, and holistic goal setting. Additionally, Dr. Lisa has recently concentrated her efforts to further advance the field of physical therapy by examining the influence of weight stigma and bias in healthcare and PT. Dr. Lisa is a regular contributor to articles on topics related to physical therapy, health and wellness, self-care, motherhood, body positivity, and pregnancy, and has had the distinct honor of being featured in Oprah Magazine, Shape Magazine, Livestrong, Bustle, and several other national and local publications. Additionally, she is a member of the National Association of Black Physical Therapists, the Association of Size, Diversity, and Health, the Know Women, and so much more. So clearly, she has the experience, she has the knowledge, just bringing such a great message to this podcast. We're so excited to share it with you, helping bring some great messaging to weight stigma and being healthy at every size, what that actually means, tearing down some of the myths that might get thrown at the being healthy at every size movement. So we're so excited to share this one from you. She is a behavior specialist. That's one of the things I love about being in physical therapy, is being able to affect people's behaviors, being able to really focus on what it means to be a healthy individual. Lisa has some amazing tips for everybody. So listen in.
Dr. Lisa, thank you so much for being here with us. I'm honestly really excited to be able to dive into this conversation with another physical therapist. I think in my experience in the physical therapy realm, I really just see us talking mostly just pain, injury, rehab. You know, I don't see us crossing over into this because it feels like trainer territory. Do we talk about this? Is it our territory? And so I think the fact that you're bringing this up and you're creating such a safe space for people, women in general, is such a cool thing. So thank you, first of all, for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to dig into this with you also.
So one of our favorite places to dive in with people is more about their story and why they're so passionate about this. And I read a little bit about kind of your story about just diet culture and growing up, but can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So I am a physical therapist and I've been practicing for 14 years. And I've always loved the field. I have my own practice. I absolutely love what I do. But as my practice has kind of niched down to focusing a lot on women and mothers in particular, and then the health coaching side of my business, I have been sort of introduced to some other issues and concerns that I too dealt with, you know, growing up and then my whole life and transitioning into motherhood. And that has a lot to do with like body image and fat shaming and weight stigma and those things. And I never really pay them a lot of attention because it was just sort of a part of life. You know, I'm a really, really short girl. I'm only 4'11". So despite the fact that, you know, I was a distance runner and I, you know, did track, I did cross country, I danced, extremely active, always healthy, my weight never met the standard of being what they would consider normal. So literally my entire life, I've been considered overweight or obese. And it was something that I struggled with very personally, didn't really talk about it as much. But as I started to help more women, I started to see they had the same issues and concerns. And I kind of dove headfirst into the Health at Every Size movement, following Dr. Lindo Bacon. I learned so much and I realized there's this space that all healthcare professionals can really, you know, help with their clients. You know, we treat the whole person as therapists, right? Not just, you know, the knee or the one issue that they're having. So it's been life-changing and eye-opening for me personally, as well as professionally, to really grab a hold of this idea that you don't have to be thin to be healthy, and you can actually be healthy in any body size. And fat is not the enemy, nor is it the devil, you know, so it's been really, really good for my practice and for my personal life.
I can relate as well. I think a lot of people can, growing up in the culture and just being, you know, you see magazines, you're seeing movies, you're seeing everything you're surrounded by. I can even remember growing up, it was like the first thing that you look for in a photo. How do I look? What does my body look like? And I always talk about that
so
too.
Toxic.
Like instead of appreciating the people you're with, the surrounding as to where you are, like you immediately judge yourself. And it is a part of life almost of what people are just used to. When did this really start for you? Like when was it in your life that you started to notice this?
Oh my gosh. Originally, you know, without any real context, I was probably 12. I was probably 12 years old when I started looking at my body as something to be manipulated and changed. So I think I started trying my first diet around 12 or 13, which as an adult now, I'm 40 this year. So it's sad. Like that hurts my heart that I was even, you know, considering that I'd never want that for my children. But yeah, it started very young. And because it was not something, you know, we didn't talk about toxic diet culture, you know, in the 90s and the 80s. It was just a part. It was sort of considered health. Like diet culture sort of equated to health or fitness because there was no easy way to separate the two. So that's when it became real for me. And then it sort of resurfaced in my life as I got married and started having babies and all of the body changes that came with that. And then that kind of rolled me into the other culture, the snapback culture, right? I had a baby. I must get back to my previous size immediately. And there's just a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure on everybody. I've actually had this conversation with men, but I think most people would agree that women, we take the brunt of the trauma as it relates to our body images and our ideal selves and whatnot.
There's just so much pressure that comes from that outward facing media. And I think it's so sad. Like you talked about, you kind of felt like you started feeling that pressure to go into your first diet when you were like 12 or so. And that was probably before we even had as significant a pressure from like social media and stuff. And it's like, how can we even start to change maybe for our kids or the next generation what it means, like what this word of diet means, especially with this pressure of social media around us that's saying like, don't eat any carbs or yeah, don't eat any fat or do this diet, do that diet. You need to look this way. Like it's so difficult with all of that social pressure out there.
It is. It's pervasive. You know, it's become, diet culture is ingrained in our ideologies. We have this thin ideal. We automatically associate fat with poor health. We associate thin with good health without any acknowledgement of the person's actual health markers. And it's a part of social media absolutely made it worse because it created this place where we could now put our very best photos up and nip and tuck a few things if we need to, you know, with the help of photoshopping and, you know, seeing celebrities and things like that. So it's pervasive. It's a part of our experience in healthcare. You know, I have had multiple patients just this year tell me that they felt a sense of trauma going to see their doctor because they're complaining about an ache or a pain and they're just being told, well, lose weight and it'll probably be fine. So there's this level of fat shaming that's in every aspect of our lives and discrimination. It's like one of the only discriminations that we don't really frown upon. You know, think about airplane seats. You know what I mean? Like an average size person can barely fit in an airplane seat. So imagine someone in a larger body, you know, in that scenario, the humiliation and the fear and the anxiety. There's so much. It's literally the world is not set up for people in larger bodies to thrive. And diet culture is a part of manipulating that narrative that, well, you're fat because you're not doing something right. And if you just change, if you just restrict yourself, if you just try this tea or this waist trainer or this, you know, fat burner, you'll be thin like everybody else and you'll be happy. And it couldn't be further, you know, from the truth. The research clearly shows that most people that are intentionally trying to lose weight, and when I say most, I'm saying like 95% of them, are unable to do so and keep it off. Because our bodies are kind of wise in where they want to be, the best thing that we can do is move our bodies joyfully, practice great health behaviors, you know, eat when we're hungry, stop when we're full, and stop all the restriction that leads to like frequent binging and weight cycling, which is actually more unhealthy for our bodies than just happening, you know, happening to be fat or in a larger body for sure. So
this is such a great, you know, conversation too, and something that I think a lot of people don't understand, especially if you're not in the healthcare field. You don't understand what is healthy supposed to mean, because all we get told is numbers, right?
Yes. Or
like I was even talking to a family member who is being told that they're going into the obese category, and they're like, well, but I'm active and I'm moving and I'm, you know, I don't feel that way, but that's what now I'm being told. So how do we then determine what healthy is? What should we be looking at to actually determine those health markers?
That's a great question. And this is, for me, the take home for everyone is that health is different on everyone. You know, your healthiest weight might be where your body is fairly thin, whereas the next person's healthiest, you know, body, healthiest size may be much larger. And there's nothing wrong with that. So the first thing is getting rid of this idea that numbers really matter, because they don't. A lot of my clients, we throw away the scale because it's really just feeling like you're enough or feeling like you're too much. So really what we should be thinking about when we think about real health is some of the, you know, the basics, the blood markers. Do you have decent cholesterol? Is your blood pressure, you know, running normally? How's your fasting blood sugar looking? What's your resting heart rate? Sometimes that can give you an idea of how athletic you are or how strong you are. We can look at things like strength, your flexibility, your range of motion, you know, as PTs, like that's like really important. You can look really great, but if you go to do something and move and reach for something and you pull a muscle, well, guess what? Your muscle wasn't really functioning optimally. So it's important to look at those things, how you feel, what your endurance is like, how is your balance? You know, there's so many other markers of health and fitness that we ignore when we just look at someone's body size and their weight.
I think that's an absolutely incredible point. And I like how you, again, as a professional, are tying this into how you consult with people. And I think you have a type of coaching called naturopathic lifestyle coaching, where you weave in a lot of these different messages about how we're consuming food practices, how we're consuming movement practices, how successful that is in helping us live a purposeful life. And so I'm just wondering, because I know when some people talk about the healthy at every size movement, they can say, oh, you might just be giving people an excuse to say, oh, I can just eat whatever I want because I can still be healthy at any size. So I'm wondering, how is it that we can talk about things that can be really sensitive, like food eating habits and things like that, when we're also wanting to preach that you can still be healthy at any body size?
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad you brought that up. And it is definitely a common, I guess you could call it, argument to the health at every size approach and the mantra. But the reality is, you know, body positivity, health at every size, those concepts are not, they weren't created to throw away health behaviors. As a matter of fact, they promote health behaviors. Like that's the idea. When we feel positive about our bodies, when we love our bodies, when we care for our bodies, we're going to want to do things that are good for our bodies. The problem is those things get distorted in the lens of diet culture, because if we're practicing these health behaviors and guess what, our weight is not changing or our body is not changing at the rate that we would like, or we still don't meet the mark of being a normal weight, we get discouraged. We feel defeated. We feel like what we're doing isn't working. And so then we dig into behaviors that would, you know, lean more toward disordered eating and patterns that are actually very unhealthy for ourselves, in an effort just to make the scale change or just to make our body sizes change. Here's the reality. There are some people in this world that will be fat, and it's okay. Because if they are healthy with regard to their, you know, their blood markers and, you know, the way they feel and their mental health, which is a whole nother component to health that we just dismiss when we're looking at people's bodies all day. If they're still healthy, it's okay. Some people just carry more fat than others. That is just the reality. And there's no need to feel this desire to fit in or to look a certain way in the absence of like really being concerned about your actual health. So health at every size is about respecting your body and appreciating it for what it can do, and then treating it in a kind and loving way which will include, you know, some sort of exercise and, you know, eating well, not starving yourself, not stuffing yourself. You know what I mean? It's, to me, it's really that beautiful gray area where you can live with this freedom, this sense of food freedom. I always recommend the book Health at Every Size by Dr. Linda Bacon, as well as Intuitive Eating by Evelyn Triboli and Elise Resch, because those books sort of give you the framework for understanding, like, hey, I don't, like, being in this movement doesn't mean I don't take good care of myself or sit back and eat fast food all day and never move. Like, that, who does that? Like, that's not, you know, that those types of behaviors are usually achieved through, like, binging. Like, it's like a binging activity after you've been dieting and everything for so long, then you just feel like, oh, I'm over it, you know? But if you just have a regular active lifestyle and you're feeding yourself when you're hungry and stopping when you're full, you're doing what's best for your body, you know?
Yeah, I think it's hard to even start to recognize those signals if you've been so disconnected from it, right? Like, how do I know when I'm actually hungry or full if I've been told I need to eat six meals a day, or if I need to, it gets hard, especially if you start doing the not eat and then binge eat or anything like that. You start cutting off those signals and losing how to even listen to the body. And I know I've gone through that myself.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's such, how do you start to guide people into this concept of food freedom? I think it's something that a lot of people want to get to, but it's a hard concept to even really live into. So how do you start to guide that?
Yes, that's great. And you're right. That is the problem for most of us. We're disconnected from our bodies because you're right. We follow rules. We're like, okay, it's 10 o'clock. I got to eat. Oh, it's 7 o'clock. Can't eat anything else. Oh, I can't have carbs. Can't have this. So we create these rules and these crazy restrictions, and we don't know when we're hungry or full. So, you know, the start of it is weird. I'll be very honest. I felt, like I said, the book Intuitive Eating has some great tips and tools and sort of a framework for doing this. And when I'm working with my coaching clients, usually my busy moms, you know, we start with, like, write down all of the food rules you've ever followed. Like, write them down, like, literally, or type them up. And then we talk through them and we cross each of them out. So the process starts with unlearning. So it starts with taking all the rules you've ever heard, crossing them out and unlearning them, and then committing to trying the things that you said you weren't supposed to have. So the first part of intuitive eating, you might find yourself kind of going crazy, like, oh, I can have cheesecake again. Oh my God, I can have cookie. What? But then what you do by slowing down and eating and tasting the food, you get to decide, A, do I actually like this? Like, is this actually good? Or was I just fiending for, you know, some sugar because I've been restricting myself? Then you get to decide how the food is making you feel. It's like you've been craving chocolate chip cookies for months, right? Because you've been on this diet to fit into a bridesmaid dress. And then you get the cookie and you're like, okay, I didn't necessarily like it. Or maybe it was good, but now I feel horrible. My stomach side. Am I hungry? Do I really like what this is I've been craving and wanting? And then how is it actually making my body feel? So it's sort of this exploration, if you will, of food again. And then you're able to decide, like, okay, if I want this, I can have it. I don't have to create a strict rule around it. But I did notice that it didn't make me feel good. It didn't give me the energy I wanted. So I may just, you know, choose something else. And it's such a beautiful place to, like, be when you get there. It takes a minute. It takes some practice. It's not, you know, something you're going to do in one day by any means. But it feels so good to, like, not feel like I got to wait till Saturday to have a slice of pizza. It's like, no, have a slice of pizza if you want a slice of pizza. Like, don't create all this stress around eating. Then it's not even enjoyable, you know, at that point. So it's a whole process. But I love helping people walk through that door, you know, in the coaching side of my business.
I think that it's so important that you bring that up. And it can be so empowering for people the first time that they start to connect how they feel and how they feel in their body with what they ate. And when they allow themselves to eat something like that, but do it a little more mindfully, like you said, like me myself, I talk about this here and there when we have, you know, different podcasts on food topics or eating disorders. And, you know, I think it's very important that people understand eating disorders happen at every size also. And me as an athlete, I'm getting much more comfortable saying I used to be a very common binge purge style athlete where I could eat 5,000-6,000 calories really easily because I needed to gain weight. I needed to gain weight and I needed to fit this idea of how it looked and all of these different things. And those eating behaviors really carry over to today where it can be really easy for me to eat a couple pints of ice cream back to back. And then my body feels awful if I'm not a little bit more conscious when I have those two pints of ice cream sitting in front of me and instead just decide to take a couple bites of each of them and put them away.
Yeah, that's a great point. You're right. Eating disorders affect us at all sizes, all fitness levels. I would argue that the majority, I'd say, of at least Americans have participated in some form of disordered eating at one point or another, just because diets are so pervasive and rampant. And just like you said, the competitive nature in it, like if you need to make weight for something, you're going to do whatever you need to do because, you know, it's a part of your life or something, you know, that's really important to you. But ultimately, those behaviors don't serve us well, especially in the long run.
I mean, I think especially in America, too, it's like I remember recently we went to a restaurant and it was one of, I would say it's a typical American chain restaurant. And the portions were so huge that if someone is just sitting there eating and socializing and you're expected to finish your plate and then move on to the next meal and then move on to the next meal. Mm. Like we're, again, I feel like we're shutting off this idea of listening to your body or making it okay to like take a portion home and not have to finish or share. And it's just ingrained in our culture to either binge and eat a whole bunch of food and then starve yourself because now you're doing it too much. And then it's this huge wave of back and forth and we've completely lost this idea of being able to listen to our body. And it just makes me sad to even, you know, see that and experience it and be in it.
Yeah. You know, when we start to lose it, we start to lose it in childhood. How many of you grew up in a household where clean your plate or you're in trouble, yeah, or you can't have dessert, or, you know, and I'm not saying this from a high horse. I've done that same crap to my kids before and I've had to back it up because that does not teach them to intuitively and mindfully eat. It teaches them that they're starving kids in other countries. So eat all this food, you know, don't waste. And that's not, it's not helpful in the long run at all.
Yeah. One of my favorite things I hear my nieces and nephews do now is my tummy is full. And instead of saying like, I'm done, I want to go play, or, you know, and that's sometimes what they want to do, but they yeah. they are saying it because like, they're not trying to get to the next meal or the next snack or the next dessert. They're saying my tummy is full. I am complete. And it's such a good behavior and something that I admire in how they've been taught from my sister and her husband and in what they're instructing and how they're trying. You know, I don't know that any parent is going to be perfect, but we're trying to instill better behaviors yeah. and better understanding within the body.
Do you have any really good tips for parents out there to on, you know, little things that they can do with their kids on how to maybe instill better intuitive habits in their kids rather than this, oh, this is a good food and this is a bad food type habit?
Yeah, I have been learning about that as a parent who has gotten it wrong. So one of my favorite accounts to follow on Instagram is called Feeding Littles, and they offer great tips. And some of the things that I've gathered from them and then just other reading and research is that with kids, you always kind of start with smaller portions, obviously, because they're smaller people, but giving them a variety of foods, not withholding one food group until they finish the other, which is really hard for me, but giving them options, putting it all on one plate. And then more so than, you know, telling them what to do is really just watching them kind of, you know, do as they choose and honoring that and trying to respect their decisions. Like you said, when your niece or nephew says like, my tummy is full, as a parent, as an adult, respecting that and saying, okay, I'll, you know, maybe leave it out if you want to maybe come back to it in a little bit, if you find that you're hungry later, but that's fine. If you're done, you know, go play and be done. And I think doing that just it teaches that, first of all, that their wishes can be respected with regard to what they're putting in their bodies. And, you know, that they are smart enough and wise enough to know when they want to eat and when they don't, and how much of it they want to consume. So just respecting them and listening, giving them a variety of food choices, you know, maybe not timing their meals. It's okay to leave their food sitting out for a little bit if they want to come back to it. Kids like to graze a lot, you know, so just being okay with that. And for parents like myself who like to be very structured, and this is when we do this and this is when we do that, it's just going to require a little bit of relaxation on your part and kind of giving over the reins a bit, because you want them to establish their own healthy eating habits without you enforcing any rules or limitations or restrictions on them.
And then when it comes to the parent, how do you start to guide the parent to demonstrate these eating habits? Like what are they doing to provide this environment, this structure, this example of what food freedom or healthy eating, or how do we start to determine that?
So it's kind of what you guys were sort of mentioning. It's, and you're right, kids need, you can tell kids what to do, but we know kids model behavior. So if they see you do it, same thing when I talk to people about body positivity, you can tell your kids they're beautiful, their bodies are strong, but if they see you in the mirror saying bad things about yourself, not wanting to be in pictures, they're going to pick up on those behaviors. So modeling is everything. So in the same way that you want them to try a variety of foods, you need to have access to a variety of foods. You need to, you know, try different foods. They need to see you eating different things. They need to know that no food is bad. Like I stopped using the term junk food with my kids. I'm like, you know, I don't want them to get this hierarchy of food. Like, you know, this food is better, and if you choose these foods, you're better, you know, because that's not the case. So it's really just about, you know, saying, like, I call them sweet treats. Like, oh, you want a sweet treat? That's fine. You know, we have something. I used to be very strict about not keeping any types of like desserts in the house. And it's like, I had to let that go, because when my kids would get access to those things, they would literally do the behaviors that you would see adults doing. Go crazy. Eat as much of it as they can, because they never know when they're going to see it again, because that's the kind of kitchen that I had. So now our kitchen is far more open. We have a lot more snacks. We have sweet treats. We have tons of fruits and vegetables. So they get to make choices. And they're, like I said, they're intuitive already. And I was taking some of that intuition away from them by giving them more food rules. So now that they're allowed to be a little bit more, you know, honest and open about what they want and how they feel, they have more options at their disposal. And so we just model that behavior by, you know, cooking and having foods available and eating them, and not, you know, using terms good and bad or junk food or things like that, for sure.
I think that's so important, just that reframing of what we call things and not labeling them as good and bad, but providing the options. And I really like what you said, because I keep telling Jen that when I bring out seafood around our hopeful future children someday, that she can't make bad and disgusting faces, because our kids will be intuitive beings. And if they see their mother, they see their mother putting up danger signals, they might not eat seafood. And I'll be really sad if I'm the only one in our family that likes seafood. So.
That is funny. What kind of seafood, though? Are you talking like the really, really tough stuff to eat? I don't know. I might be on Jen's side with
Thank you.
I'm open to all seafood. I'm an equal opportunity seafood eater. But if anybody will eat any seafood with me, I'll be happy.
Awesome. Awesome. I love seafood. I just prefer it all be cooked. I'm not into raw stuff. I can't do it.
So I have a question just about refocusing health goals. And I know you work with a lot of clients on this. And I don't know if you have any easy tips, just because a lot of health goals can be so number focused. I want to get to this certain way so that, you know, maybe if I'm not thinking it or saying it out loud, but so I can look a certain way or whatever. How do you help people refocus health goals on what's important?
That's a good question. And that literally is something I have to do every single day, because we are so like just more likely to say, here's a weight goal. I want to be this weight. I want to be this size. Or we're good about seeing someone online like, oh, she has a body I would really like to have. And I really, really just discourage that. Ultimately, I respect body autonomy. So I'm not going to tell any client that comes to me, your goals are bad, that's stupid, don't do that. Like, if you really have a weight goal, I don't think that that's a wise decision. And here's the evidence-based research to support it. But ultimately, you are an autonomous human being and you can choose whatever you want for yourself. And I will support you as much as I possibly can. But what I encourage them to do is to find like achievement goals. If it's like, I want to run my first, you know, 5K. All right, let's do it. Or I want to run my 5K in under this amount of time. All right, let's work on that. I would like to be able to lift X amount of pounds or bench press or deadlift. Let's do that. You know, I would like to be consistent with working out 4 days a week. Let's do that. Like, there's so many things we can do to sort of rate your improvement or rate your progress that weight really doesn't have to be a part of it. It really doesn't need to be, because ultimately you can be in a smaller body and be less healthier than you are in a larger body. That is the reality. There are people who are sick or dealing with drug addiction or eating disorders, and they're looking great. And that's been a very interesting topic I've had with other professionals, is the conundrum of being in your smallest body ever and getting all these compliments about how great you look, and no one knows, like, you're in the process of struggling with an eating disorder or drug addiction or a sickness, you know, that you haven't been public about. But then when you put on weight and you actually are in a much better health status, you know, you don't get those compliments anymore. And I know people who have personally gone through that. So just restructuring your idea of what progress is, and not making the numbers be the end all be all, because there's so many other things that you can rate and look at and see how you have improved your flexibility, your strength, all of those things.
That's so huge. And I think it's an important thing to remember. You never know what's going on within a person, really, because we can look at all these photos, but are they even getting their period? Are their hormones exactly good? Is their thyroid working? Like, you don't know. There are people that I know that look extremely healthy and yet are not getting their period. So are they really healthy? That should be a part of the woman process, you know? So I think it's so important to continue to remember that the photo that you see, the image that you see, does not dictate how someone is feeling, how they're living, and what's going on within their body. And it's such an important message. Now, when you are a health professional yourself, have you dealt with people not feeling like they want to come to you, or opposite, people want to come to you because they're like, oh, she's open and I can actually feel safe in you know, her care. Like, what are there any stigmas that you've had to face?
Yeah, so as of late, it's been the latter, because my Instagram profile and so much of what I speak about and talk about now is, you know, body positivity, health at every size. So yes, now I have people seeing that and being like, oh my God, thank you. There's a safe space. I can go, you know, because I offer wellness services. So, you know, I want to get stronger. Okay, I can work out with her because she's not going to make me feel like crap or make me, you know, yell at me or anything. People have experienced some very interesting things. I hear a lot of stories. So yes, now in the past, interesting scenarios, and some of this, I can admit, some of this is in my own head, just being a part of this diet culture phenomenon. But when I was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I was doing sort of a series where I was doing some exercise instruction. I had a health and wellness ministry at my church, and I was teaching exercise classes there and then starting to teach them more in the community. And I can remember never feeling comfortable or confident. Like, yes, I could do the whole workout, guide you through it, talk, and not feel like I was going to die. So I was fairly healthy. I was doing it when I was pregnant, so I was fine. But because my body never looked like, oh, I don't have the definition here, I've got a little pooch in my stomach, you know, I always had that insecurity that it's like, girl, who are you? Like, how are you teaching fitness? You know what I mean? And very rarely would anyone say that to my face. But of course, social media, you'll hear comments or see things, you know. So it's definitely something that I have personally dealt with. I would say that it's been largely my own insecurities, but here and there, people are brave enough to either post something on the internet or, you know, make a sly sort of comment. And it's stressful and it's sad, you know, but you have to take it and use it to fuel you to, you know, be better and remember that, like, their opinion of me or, you know, my insecurities, you know, they don't define me. And I can do this, and I have been doing this, you know, but that's definitely happened for sure.
I mean, that's so hard. I even remember Shalene Johnson just released a video talking about, you know, the company that she used to work for. And she got a comment that the next video series would be so much better if she lost more weight. And she was already, like, killed herself to get to the smallest portion that she just, you know, realized my brain health is losing my brain health. Like, she got a scan and it was really bad and everything else was starting to fail. And she's just like, what am I doing this for? You know, and had to take a step back and really look at it. But those are the things that And just like you said, she is getting all these compliments. You look so amazing. Oh my God, you're so great. But no one knows how much she's suffering. And it's just so sad that we've built this idea and this picture of what someone is quote unquote supposed to look like, especially if they're in the health community, rather than refocusing on what is important. And I think that's exactly what you're doing, is you're helping people refocus. What is the goal? What is the actual goal behind this weight that you're trying to achieve? You know, why? What is the purpose? And when we get back to the why of things, it's just so much healthier.
I think it brings up a good, you know, a couple pros and cons about social media too, with, you know, things like you're doing. It really helps you find the community, and it really helps magnify the community around certain areas like this, but it also helps magnify the negativity sometimes that can get thrown our way about certain things. And like you were saying, it's human nature to kind of magnify those things and those negative comments. Those are the only things we see, even if 90% of the rest of it is people that we can connect with and people that we can help and people that we can, you know, bond with and grow with.
Yeah. Yep, that's so true. We do shine a light on that negative stuff. The cool thing about social media too is that we have the power. We can curate it. You know, you can curate your feed to be mostly body positive, you know, or just accounts that inspire you. And so that's actually a big part of my coaching program. We go through, like, don't make your social media something that makes you look at it and makes you sad or feeling, you know, inferior or less than. Like, unfollow or mute, whatever you have to do to, you know, build yourself up and give you something to look at that inspires you and makes you feel better about yourself.
Totally. I do want to just touch on the body positivity just a little bit, because, you know, some people, I think it's hard to look at it and say, that's such a great place to be, but how do you actually get there?
Yeah, that's a process. It's a whole process. And to be honest, I actually lean my clients into body neutrality first, because I think it's just a safer space and it's easier to get to with a little bit of effort. It starts with that same thing, unlearning the ideas around, you know, what you're supposed to look like, embracing what you do look like. I tell my patients to, like, look at your body, like, get naked and look at yourself, normalize what you see. You know, you'd be surprised, like, fully clothed in my gym, in my clinic, I have clients that won't look in the mirror while they're working out. And I'm like, hey, no, you need that feedback so you can see your form. Mm. But it's because they don't like what they see. And it's so disheartening and sad and heartbreaking. But I tell them, you know, the ones that I'm coaching, I'm like, go home, take off your clothes, check your body out, look at yourself and get comfortable with seeing it. Because when you see it more, you can normalize it and it doesn't become this, you know, creepy, disgusting thing that you just avoid at all costs, you know? So check yourself out and then focus on the utility of your body. Focus on, you know, hey, my body just carried me through a global pandemic. Thank you, body. You know, my body just got me up and down these stairs, you know, and I actually feel okay. Thank you, body. So appreciate what your body has done for you and how it has carried you through, and start there with the respect and the neutrality. And then hopefully, as you look more and appreciate and value yourself more, you can start to see the positivity in it and saying, like, oh, you know what? I look good. You know, these curves, these rolls, all, like, I look great. And there's nothing wrong with feeling that way. Everybody won't get to body positivity necessarily. But as long as you're not, you know, on the opposite end of that spectrum where you're hating your body and never wanting to look at it or engage with it, you know, then it's still progress and it's still okay. So I think body neutrality is just as important, if not more than, you know, positivity.
I love that.
Yeah, I think that outlines such a great process of how this is almost like exercise in itself. Of, you know, it's not going to feel great right away. So you might need to start out with that body neutrality, because you can't just jump to running a marathon if you haven't been doing anything. You got to start by going out and outside and walking, you know, for a few miles and just saying, like, hey, this is okay. This is what it is. And it's not using that negativity. I think that's a great way of starting to desensitize yourself and walk that path.
That's something that I even had to do. I mean, I'm sure people would look at me and say, what, like, you ever had any body image issues? But yes, I did, because I grew up around the same culture, right? We always were judging ourselves and looking and hearing things. And I had to make a conscious decision to start, I actually was starting to say great things that I loved about myself every day. And it didn't always have to be about my image or what I looked like, but just what my body could do. And I had to say positive things. And then I started to ask for support. Okay, people around me, even my mom, my friends, my best friends, people I'm around all the time. If I say anything negative about myself, can you please catch me and just yes. remind me to reverse it? And I would then ask my friends, like, if you're going to say anything negative about yourself around me, can I catch you? And mm-hmm. and just like, let's not put that in our space, because then we're telling each other that it's okay. We continue, like, it's just not helpful for anyone. If I do it for myself, that's what I started to realize. If I'm doing this to myself, then I'm telling other people they should do it to themselves. And that's really what started to like flip the switch in my head of like, I'm making this okay for everyone. If I do it to myself, like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to put that environment out there.
Yes. I love that. That accountability is so freaking powerful. Like, having that in your friend group is so awesome. I have that with my friends as well, but you're right. If you have one person in the group that does that, it's almost contagious. And you're right. Everybody starts to kind of do the same thing. Nobody sees themselves as enough. And so I feel very blessed to have a good friend circle who checks me and who I can check. And I think that's awesome that you have that. Everybody should have that.
That accountability is just so, so important. And I know that you do a lot of this stuff on your page and a lot of stuff like this online. So can you tell us a little bit about where people can find more of what you do?
Yeah. So I live on Instagram. It's my happy place for social media. So you can find me at Healthy Fit, and that's HEALTHYPHIT. You can also check my website, of course, www.healthyfit.com. But really, Instagram is my happy place. I'm also on the new Peanut app. It's like Clubhouse, but it's just for moms. And I've been having some lovely discussions on there with moms about body image and health at every size and fitness and exercise. It's been so, so, so exciting. So if you're on the Peanut app, I'm Dr. Lisa Folden on there. So you can look me up there as well.
That's so awesome. You're really doing so much to just start creating this shift in conversation and safe space for women in particular to start to move forward and find a new type of healthy. So thank you for what you're doing, for having the conversation with us. Hopefully this helped to just open some people's eyes. You know, we're not talking into weight. We're talking into feeling. And it's such a beautiful place to start to come back to. So thank you so much.
You guys are so welcome. Thank you again for having me. This was awesome. Awesome.
Well, there you have it. Such a great interview, such great tips. Such a great message. Grateful for having Dr. Lisa in. Thank for all of the things that she's doing in the world of physical therapy and also in the world of helping people become healthy at any size and find really what it means in their life to live a healthy and fulfilled life. If you're looking for ways to support the podcast, we can always use your support. Go grab the Mobility Method or the Optimal Body. Join the Optimal Body membership. It's an amazing community of movers. Of course, if you want to grab a pair of Vivo barefoot shoes, you can get Vivos. Code OPTIMAL15 gets you 15% off and helps give us a little bit of support as well. But really, one of the best ways to support is to share this out. Share it so more listeners can come in and get this great information, or go and subscribe, rate, and review so we can just get pushed out more on those podcast apps. And of course, we will see you next time.